climate cultist, hypocrite, fake climate cult, fake COVID-19. Why no mask, Obama? He knew. Watch what they do, not what they say. They use your kindness, make you fearful, and profit. Oh. Wake up, America.
Welcome to the DFL Debrief. So great to be here with you all. My name is Brian Evans, Communications Director for the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. Joining me, DFL Party Chairman Ken Martin.
Brian and Will, it's like Christmas in August. The day has finally arrived. Speaker Melissa Hortman joining this podcast. We've been waiting for years for this to happen. Actually, have we been on for years?
She's been begging us for years to come on, and we finally said, okay, we got some stuff for you.
Joining us as well, Research Director Will Davis.
Always a wonderful time. Happy birthday, Brian. Birthday boy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Aww.
For Speaker Hortman joining the podcast, I decided not to say anything last week, even though we knew it was happening. And then she was actually in here this week. So I think that confirms that we can never, ever tell you who our guests are going to be. I'm so sorry, dear listeners. It just doesn't work out.
48 years old? Is that correct?
I thought he was 18 years old, actually.
So. You know, I feel like it's either one or the other. 31.
Do you want to know a funny story, Ken? I got an email, and it was from Donna Evans, Brian's mother, who wanted us to celebrate Brian's birthday properly. And so she sent over some money. So we went out to lunch and celebrated.
Wow.
Had a couple margaritas. All the fun stuff. Yes.
God. Nice.
So thank you very much. She's an avid listener of the debrief also.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I've got actually like a couple family members listen, which, thank you all so much. It's really awesome. I appreciate
20% it. 20% of our listenership are Evans.
And they still associate with you. Incredible.
I know. It's kind of astonishing on multiple different levels.
He's their least favorite host, though, of the show. So
what are you and your partner and other friends and family do anything to celebrate?
Yeah, we're me and my partner, Emmett, are going out to dinner tonight, which is going to be a lot of fun. Some friends and I went out to Can-Can Wonderland last weekend,
nice.
Played some arcade games, got some drinks. It was a blast. Mm. And then Saturday, of course, I'm going to be celebrating with an SCC meeting.
Thanks, Ken.
Or as I like to think of it, my 12-hour birthday party.
It's going to be amazing.
I mean, you know, I guess
it's going to be amazing.
Our friends and loved ones' invite got lost in the mail, Ken.
Just nothing like a state central committee to celebrate your 31st birthday.
We all chipped in and got you something, Brian. Yeah.
If anyone who is going to be at that meeting would like to get me a gift, consider it a question called. Yeah. I will take gifts in the form of calling every question you can.
The gift would be to just adjourn immediately upon convening.
Just a motion to approve everything immediately.
By acclamation.
Yes.
In honor of Ryan's birthday, we are going to approve the whole agenda.
I think that's the least these debriefers could do for us.
I asked for it last time in St. Cloud, and no one stepped up to the plate. So maybe this time around, someone will.
Fingers crossed.
Indeed. Yeah.
It's going to be an amazing week. We go from the high of Speaker Melissa Hortman and Brian's birthday to
the other high of
State Central
of
Committee
being meeting. High to get through it. So,
wow! To all our Central Committee members out there, know that you are loved.
Absolutely.
Not that much that we want to spend 12 hours with you on Saturday.
On our Saturday, no, not so much. It's going to be. I guarantee you, it's going to be the most beautiful weather day of the year too. As we're all stuck inside, every single time.
Every one of our friends will all be up to interesting things and desperate for us to join them.
Right. Yep.
Well, without further ado, on that note,
we actually have a very fun interview for you with Minnesota Speaker of the House, Melissa Hortman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who, we all know Speaker Hortman, to varying degrees. And I'll just say that, as far as elected officials go, she's just genuinely one of the most like down to earth people that I've met and had a chance to talk with. And it was a real joy having her on the podcast. This week on the DFL Debrief, we are tremendously lucky to be joined by Speaker of the Minnesota House of Representatives, Melissa Hortman. Ooh. Welcome to the podcast.
Yay. Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
First time on our podcast, Speaker Hortman.
I didn't know that we did.
Oh, come on. You and most Minnesotans. I'm now breaking the news to you that we have a grand total of, 10 listeners?
Maybe a few more than that,
but we're really glad you're on. So
someday I'm going to start listening to podcasts.
Well, we know you don't have a lot of time for frivolous things like listening to unknown broadcast podcasts or radio shows.
Minnesota Republicans listen to this more than the DFL does. I'm pretty sure that's true.
Probably isn't helping them get above their $53.
That's right, exactly. So, you had an amazing session here. We're going to talk about that. But on the outset here, I just wanted to thank you for your leadership, of course, both in the legislature and, of course, your leadership on the campaign side of getting us to the trifecta, which, was just remarkable. And everywhere I travel, and I'm sure you're hearing this too, both in the state and then outside of the state, people are really looking to Minnesota as the example. We truly are the shining star, the North Star of what government and responsible government should look like. And I'm just really proud of you personally as a friend, but also your leadership was tremendous. So anyways, let's jump into it.
Thanks a million. Yeah.
Well, I think I was just going to ask first, you've gotten a lot of credit for all the great things that the legislature did, but do you think maybe it's too much credit considering everyone just agreed the whole time and no one had any argument about any of the plans and, it was just...
Yeah,
put it in front of them. They signed it, right?
You rolled in there at maybe 11, took a long lunch, were out of there by 3.
It was a full team effort. I know that all of the members and the people who work at the Capitol who aren't members, like the lobbying community, the government relations community, people are still tired. Here we are in August and they're still trying to recover. I think they were real happy that we finished on time so they could start the recovery process. But I think in the House, we had a little bit of a leg up because we had been in the majority for 4 years. And so a lot of the bills we had passed several times, legalization of cannabis, paid family medical leave, really complicated, big, huge policy changes. But we had worked through them over a couple of sessions. And so we kind of had a head start. Mm-hmm. But then we had fabulous teammates. I really can't say enough about Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dedzic. I still love saying Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dedzic.
Sounds good.
And Tim Walz and his whole extremely talented team. We were just fully doing teamwork from the word go.
Yeah, Speaker, you remember 10 years ago, the last trifecta we had. And of course, one of the things, there's so much good that was done during that trifecta as well. But you and I remember a lot of the stuff that didn't get done. And one of the reasons I believe is we weren't as aligned in terms of leadership. You had some, disputes between our governor and Senate leader at the time, other major policy differences. And I thought one of the most brilliant things, of course, there are differences of how you get to the path. And to say, and it's why Will was joking about this. Of course, it was remarkable what we saw, but it wasn't just rubber stamped. There was a lot of discussion and thought and debate, both within the caucus and then on the floor, of course, to get to this point. But the reality is you, the governor, and the Senate leader were unified in terms of the outcomes, even though you may have had different paths on how to get to that goal. Can you talk a little bit about in the early days before the legislative session, what those conversations look like? And then I also want you to remark a little bit on your now infamous slogan, LFG, because that really encapsulated the whole ethos and spirit of what not just you did, but our whole Democratic ecosystem was like, let's F and go. Let's do this. So, anyways.
Yeah, when we had the trifecta last time, I think there was an old school mentality between the House and the Senate where we treated each other like one of us was the Vikings and the other was the Packers, and that somebody was keeping score and it mattered who got credit for what. And I think there was also a little tension between the executive branch and the legislative branch, at least parts of it, in 2013 and 2014. And so that did get in the way of us doing all that we could do. And with this trifecta, we were aligned from the word go. So we got together the Friday after the Tuesday election Governor Walz, Leader Dedzic, and I, and we sat down and we talked about the things we wanted to do. And then it started to be that kind of situation, you know, when you buy a lottery ticket and you think of all the things that you will spend the money on if you win the lottery. We started listing off all the things we wanted to do if we had time, if we could get things done. It was a very long list. And that's why it was clear we had to get organized. We had to be ready to do pedal to the metal. And the minute that the gavel dropped on the session, that we had to go and go hard until the end to get as much done as we could.
Can you talk a little bit about how you went about kind of building that consensus among, you know, members of the House DFL caucus? I remember, I think I read that there was like a meeting that you all had where I think former Governor Mark Dayton came in and talked about, you know, the previous trifecta. Like, can you talk about what that consensus building process kind of looked like in those early days?
Well, there's two things. One thing that was very important was the retreat that we had. We took all of the newly elected and returning Minnesota House DFL members, and we had a retreat. We went to Prairie Island. We were trying to visit all of the reservations in Minnesota, all of the sovereign tribal property in the state, so that people have that perspective. They understand we have 11 sovereign tribal nations. And so that's where our retreat was. We had a great retreat. We stayed two nights. The chief of staff for Mark Dayton showed up. Her name's Jamie Tincher. Mm-hmm. And then the chief of staff for Paul Thiessen, who was the speaker back then, Zach Rodvold, showed up. And they talked about what it was like in the last trifecta. And the only regrets they had were the things that they left on the table.
Yes.
Where they thought maybe they had to be a little cautious because going into the 2014 election, they didn't want anybody to say, oh, they went too far. And those were the things they regretted. Oh. The other thing that we did that got us in position to win is you have to have an inside game and an outside game. So inside the Capitol, you have to be aligned. You have to have great authors. You have to have your committee path mapped out and come to the floor and send the bill from one place to another. But you also have to have a strategy outside the Capitol where your allies are talking to Minnesotans and they're talking to each other and everybody is singing off the same sheet of music. So we had a group we called the Minnesota Values Project, where we got the House and Senate DFL and our allies aligned on goals going into the session before we even knew what the results of the election were.
But, you know, one of those things I remember sitting down with Speaker Thiessen and Majority Leader Bach and Governor Dayton right after we won the majorities back in 2012. And of course, there was a lot of conversation about overreach at the time. And because the Republicans did overreach in that previous, those two sessions, they put two nasty constitutional amendments on the ballot. And of course, it cost them their majorities. But I remember saying at the time that the opposite of overreach is just complete paralysis, where you do nothing. And I think, you know, I've always believed that if you do good things for people, they will reward you at the ballot box. And I think, you know, that was really encapsulated in, again, in this LFG, right? This idea that let's just go, let's go out there. We heard from voters. We won these majorities and we listened to people on their doors and we have to deliver for them now. And can you talk a little bit about why you said that? And really what it meant to those members to see, obviously to see their leader leading this way, but to take that and then that whole ethos into the legislative session. That was the spirit that helped drive so many people. Despite maybe some differences, it was a unifying factor in that session, I believe.
Well, it was really important that we understand that elections are not necessarily related to legislative activity. So in 2019, we were pretty sure that the 2020 election was going to be about whether we voted for the gas tax or not. Well, the 2020 election was about the pandemic and about the murder of George Floyd, things we couldn't possibly foresee. When you go back through time, and we've been in so many election cycles because we're officially old, but going back as far as we can remember, the elections are not predictable ahead of time. That's what right. the issues are going to be, what will Absolutely. Drive the outcome of the election. So too many people, when they get elected, think about the next election. And we said, no, we're not doing that. We're That's going right. to do the work for the people of Minnesota. We're going to do the most good that we can without regard to the future election, because there's no telling what the 2024 election will be about. So LFG meant, let's do all the good for the people of Minnesota that we can. And we know what we need to do. We have this whole shelf of policy proposals that are ready to go that can make a difference in people's lives right away. Driver's licenses for all, restore the vote. These are things that immediately will make people's lives different. And then all the investments that we made in education, we know that that will make a difference over time. And we said, look, we know we have this moment. Let's make the most of this.
I,
I think you're just really to be commended for that mindset. When you talk to the general public about what frustrates them the most about Democrats, it's always that they make all these promises and it never comes to fruition when they have that power. And so just changing that mindset just feels so important and huge.
But I think it's not just about Democrats. Mm-hmm. There's such a high cynicism right now amongst voters generally,
yeah, sure,
regardless of party, that people make these promises, they never deliver on
right.
them. And you know, there's the reality is, you know, it's not just cynicism in the process. There's also a real mistrust of democratic institutions and politicians. And part of that stems from the fact that, you know, they are told one thing by all of these
right.
politicians who never deliver on those promises. So, you know, part of this also is restoring trust in the democratic process, right?
Right.
You know, big D. The reality is at the end of the day, we have to make sure that people know that we're fighting for them. And that's the other piece of it, long-term, short-term. You're absolutely right, Speaker, which is, you know, it's going to make a difference in people's lives. It's going to help improve their communities. Long-term, my hope is that people start to re-engage in politics because they see that it's making a difference.
Yeah, Neil, I guess from my perspective, I'm just glad Republicans don't follow through on what they promise, because they promise a lot of terrible things that we don't actually want to have happen, you know?
That's right.
But what I was going to ask about was, you'd mentioned how you had all these bills that were like ready to go because you had the majority the previous cycle. And I think a lot of times when there's gridlock in government with Republicans having the Senate, people are like, well, why are you even introducing this bill right now? It's not going to happen. But I mean, I think this right here speaks to the value of that, right? I mean, having a marijuana bill that had been, you know, cleared the House previously, it's all written, ready to go. It really helps you kind of put your foot on the pedal once you do have total control, right?
Absolutely. A big part of it that I haven't talked about is really how incredible our staff are. So my legislative director, Chris McCall, actually he crossed out on his nameplate. It says legislative director to the speaker, and he crossed out legislative and it says LFG director to the speaker because he kept bringing a proposed calendar to me showing how many bills could we get through a certain set of committees and to the floor. And I would say faster, come back with a new calendar. Let's do it faster. We can do more in January. We can do more in February. We can do more in March, because the more you do early, the more you can do in total, because we know at the end, it's just a real crunch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I worked for Chris in 2016 and he did that to his staff, which I didn't appreciate so much back then. How much can we cram into the short amount of time? But I appreciate that he was doing it over there.
It seemed to me that it was cheerful too. It was like, right. Oh, okay. You want to go faster? Sure. We can go faster. Let's take this back to Santa's workshop and make it a little quicker.
That's awesome. And so one thing kind of, you know, in contrast to how organized DFLers were, it really felt like Republicans could kind of barely keep up with what was going on, could barely kind of muster any opposition. And you would expect, you know, given the narrow majorities that DFLers had, if they had wanted to be smart about engaging in the process, they could have said, hey, if you're having trouble getting votes on thing X, you know, we could muster the votes in our caucus if you're willing to work with us on, you know, this, that, and the other. But it seems like they, I don't know, either didn't have a strategy, or I guess, can you maybe talk to me about just what you saw from them during session? Like, were they organized? Did they know kind of, did it seem like they were actually trying to accomplish anything? What were they doing?
Well, part of our strategy was to go so fast that they couldn't organize. So by the time they figured out what their talking points were about why we shouldn't do driver's licenses for all, we were already moved on to restore the vote or lunch for kids, which is why I think you saw that their talking points on giving breakfast and lunch to children were so terrible because they didn't have much time to think about what their attacks were going to be. They could have chosen one of two paths. They could have chosen to work with us, given that there's a trifecta. Democrats have the House, Democrats have the Senate, Democrats have the governor's office. We can work with them because they're going to pass these bills. For example, in paid family medical leave, Target and Best Buy, instead of fighting us, came to the table and said, we know you're going to do this. Here's some things we've learned in offering this benefit to our employees. Please take our views into account. And they helped improve the bill. But the Republicans decided that they wanted to call everything that we did partisan, and they opted out of participating. But second of all, when you're a legislator, you get to offer amendments.
Yeah.
And if you don't offer any, then it's kind of just not that credible to complain afterwards. And I asked Republican leaders over and over again to participate with us. And there were a few cases where we did get some Republican participation. But by and large, They made a strategic decision to not vote for our stuff, even when they liked our stuff, mm-hmm. because they wanted to say that it was partisan.
One of the things that was really great about this legislative session and the last election, of course, that delivered that trifecta is we've seen a record amount of diversity and new voices in the legislature. A big part of that goes to you and the Senate for the recruitment you did to make sure that we were recruiting candidates who represented all of Minnesota. Can you talk about why it was so important to have these new voices from very diverse communities part of this legislative process this last session?
Well, representation matters. Representation isn't everything, but it is significant. So whereas I can be a good legislator for Asian Minnesotans, having an Asian Minnesotan at the table and speaking on behalf of Asian Minnesotans is a different matter entirely. Somebody can speak from their own personal experience. This is why women should be at the table when we're talking about reproductive freedom, because we happen to be part of that conversation. So representation matters, and we definitely did seek out more diverse candidates. But I got to tell you that Donald Trump was the best recruiter I ever had, because after he won in 2016, the crop of candidates that we had come forward in 2018, and then again in 2020, and then again in 2022, people said, if that bozo can run and get elected president, I have to get off the sidelines, right. and I have to come out, and I have to not just talk about politics, but I have to be right. in politics.
Can you think of any examples of a time when someone brought, you know, their like lived experience in and used it to help shape legislation, like an amendment, an idea, anything like that?
Well, absolutely. After George Floyd was murdered, the People of Color and Indigenous Caucus brought to the leadership and said, we need to declare racism as a public health hazard in the state of Minnesota. And will you, as the leader of the House, work with us to get that declaration passed in the Minnesota House of Representatives? And we did. And then we did a bunch of work on dismantling structural racism.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, as you've seen recently, the Republicans in the House tried to launch their Suburban Solutions Caucus, and it was a caucus full of six white dudes from the suburbs without any any other voices at the table. And, you know, some like members of the kind of Republican like consultant class were critical of that, but never actually made the case as to why representation actually matters, and like have failed to kind of do any of the work to convince their base of that. And so hearing that is just like a really helpful example for why, yeah, that representation does matter. Those lived experiences can help make a better legislature and help improve the lives of all Minnesotans. So I appreciate that. And also, would you join the Suburban Solutions Caucus if asked?
It's so funny because I could tell those guys what suburbanites want yes. in their elected representatives. And, you know, it's funny. We've done tons of polling all across the state. It happens to be what greater Minnesota voters want from their legislators and mm-hmm. what urban voters want from their legislators. And what they want is people who care about reproductive freedom.
Yeah.
People who care about the climate, people who care about gun violence prevention.
Yes.
And these dudes who've come together aren't in the right place on any of those things.
Well, you know, what's interesting is they're coming to this realization late after Kurt Daut and Republican leaders in the past did their best to try to create this mythical divide between right. greater Minnesota, the suburbs, the urban core. They did that at their expense, right, to try to win more seats in greater Minnesota. And for years, they tried their best to appeal to greater Minnesota. And of course, the sand started to shift beneath them. And as the population grew in the suburbs, they're now realizing, well, this is just a simple math formula, right? We're not going to win statewide unless we get votes out of the suburban communities. We're certainly not going to win legislative seats there. They continue to lose there for a whole host of reasons. But you can't just say you believe in suburban issues and then put six white dudes who know nothing yep. about what suburban voters really think. You know, I am really surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm really a little disappointed that there wasn't one single woman legislator there. They have women in the House from suburban seats, unlike in the Senate where they're at a record low. They only have three women in the Senate right now. They should have had more women and they should have had. No, look, their leader is a woman of color, Lisa Damoth. She's a woman of color. She could have stood with them, right? I mean, it's just crazy to me. So,
well, I think that they do have women in the suburbs, but they have some Trumpers. So I think that part of what yep. they were trying to mm-hmm. do is distance themselves from the toxic politics of the Republican Party which is right now so enmeshed with who Donald Trump is and what he's about. And when you try to step out like that, you know, there's just no credibility to it, because when it comes right down to it, their positions are the same.
That's right.
And when pushed, I bet you $10 each and every one of them will say that they're voting for Trump or they're with Trump.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of the funny thing behind their whole, like, oh, we're going to hold town halls thing. It's like, what, are they going to hold town halls and announce that suburban voters actually want to be price gouged by big pharma? And that's their agenda. Like,
and to not have paid time off when their mother is sick or when they have a new child. Right.
I think one of the funnest things I've seen coming out of the session, just talking to all kinds of people, is sort of the new bonds that were sort of formed this session. You know, there's obviously every single caucus is going to have their tensions between, you know, people in different areas, or just even if they're district neighbors. But I have just heard so much about all these sort of unlikely bonds that have formed, whether it's, you know, someone from the Iron Range with some local urban based legislators. Can you talk about that a little bit, how some people really learned how their colleagues work that maybe they did not appreciate previously?
Well, I think that one of the most successful pairings we had was the tax chair, Aisha Gomez, and the property tax chair, Dave Lissigart.
That's literally one of the ones I was talking about.
Dave represents the Iron Range. Aisha Gomez represents South Minneapolis, very progressive part of the state. But they're really about the same thing. They both really care about people. They both of them deeply feel the pain of the people in their districts who have the toughest road to hoe. So they were able to bond on putting together a tax bill that would make things better for people at the lower end of the income scale, whether it's people who are really poor and unable to work due to a disability or some other reason that they're not working, or the working class folks who are going, putting in their hours, showing up, the kind of people you can always count on, and really just barely getting by while the, you know, some of the ultra rich and some corporations don't pay their fair share. And they were able to bond and find a way to put together a tax package that helps cut child poverty and helps working folks and low income folks get ahead.
When I think, you know, it's sometimes even in our own party, we create these divides. We don't realize that what the speaker said earlier is the same issues that are impacting people in the urban core are impacting people in greater Minnesota and impacting people in the suburbs, right? Issues around healthcare and jobs and retirement and, you know, education. All of these pieces are critical to communities throughout the state and to people. And we sometimes believe that, you know, there's different approaches for different parts of the state. And sure, you know, we have to look through this lens a little bit more critically. But the reality is there's so much more that unites us as Minnesotans then divides us, and we can't keep playing into that divide. And it's, I think you're right though, Will. I mean, it's neat to see, and it's not just Democrats coming together either. There were instances where Democrats and Republicans found common ground too this session, and that's the way it should be. Less often than I would like to see, frankly, you know, and I, you know, not surprisingly to our listeners, blame the Republicans for this, because to Melissa's point, instead of being part of the solution, right, they wanted to just make everything a partisan argument and to say no. You cannot be the party of opposition and just be the party of no. You have to actually bring ideas to the table. It's not enough just to say, I don't like your plan. Well, okay, you don't have to like our plan in whole, but what parts do you like? What parts don't you like? What would you like to see change? And what would you do differently, right? And they never bring ideas to the table. Mm-hmm. That's the challenge right now in modern politics. And The reality is people will give us grief because we push forward our agenda. You know what? I will just say this, and you may not agree with me, Melissa, but elections at the end of the day have consequences. The vast majority of Minnesotans voted for the DFL because we had an agenda. We told the voters what we were going to do. They supported that agenda, and then we delivered on it. I am confident with your leadership we'll prevail again in 24 because we did work to make a difference in those communities. So,
well, you make an important point, which is the Republicans haven't offered anything except for no.
Yes.
When we were in the minority in 17 and 18, we put forward a full budget and we tried to participate and we had our hand out and we had it batted down time and time again. So in order to have bipartisanship, you have to have the majority extending a hand and the minority accepting it, or the other way around. Both parties have to be willing to come and work together. It doesn't work when we say, come to the table. And they say, no.
Yeah. Well, and actually, I mean, heck, they like flipped the table and, like, you know, sent everything like cascading into chaos in 2022 when they walked away from a budget deal. Like, they could have, they had multiple opportunities to be part of governing, of like helping, like use the surplus wisely to benefit all Minnesotans. And they just walked away from the table multiple times over. And so the crocodile tears about bipartisanship, like, I just
100% I don't get it. I have never seen a party walk away from a $12 billion deal at the state capitol. And the Republicans did that in 2022. And then they went on to lose.
We have just a couple minutes left, Speaker. And I guess one of the questions here is, we've done a lot of looking back, but obviously we have another half of this biennial session and then the election coming up in 24. What are you hoping to get done for Minnesotans? It's got so much done this last legislative session. I always hear when I'm out, well, what's left to accomplish? Well, there's always a lot more to do, but what are you hoping to get done in the next legislative session?
Well, to be honest, I'm a little bit nerdy on this front. I can go, you know, deep into the weeds and tell you that we haven't done much on solid waste in a really long time. We are not doing what we can on recycling, and we're sending too much to burners and to landfills. So there's a lot we could do on helping to manage solid waste a little bit more effectively. But that's, as like the former rank and file member carrying a bunch of bills on solid waste. When I think about what we're going to do, we are going to go back to all of our members after they've rested and recovered and all of our allies and say, okay, what's left on the shelf that we didn't get done? To be honest, because we were going really hard and really fast the entire session, a lot of 17-hour days in this session, there isn't a lot left sitting on the shelf. There's a couple of things that were on the table that got left behind, but in the bigger scheme of things, not as huge of a deal as some of the things we got passed. For example, sports betting. Probably we're going to do some more work on that.
Yep.
The Equal Rights Amendment. It's important to put that in the state constitution, but we do have those equal rights promised to us under other state and federal law. So, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get the support to get that through. But those are the only two things that we're moving that didn't make it across the finish line, which is a pretty small list of things that we're moving. Right. I'm sure that the members will have whole new list of things to do.
I'm sure you told your all the first termers this as well, but my conversations with them, because they're all exhausted, and my wife who works at the Capitol is exhausted. This is the most busy. I'm sure you've been in the legislature for a while. This is the busiest anyone's ever been. I try to remind those first termers that this is not normal. Next session is going to go back to normal, and they're going to feel like, you know, it's a lot slower. And it's not, it's still going to be a fast pace, but this session was amazingly, it was blazing fast. So,
and we had quite a bit of financial resources. I mean, the state had done quite well post-pandemic recovery, and so we had a lot to invest. And it'll be a much smaller level of spending in the next year because it's not a budget year.
So one of the questions we're asking all the legislators who join us here on the debrief is, you know, a lot of these bills got a ton of attention, but not all of them got any attention. Does that make sense? No, whatever. But is there one in particular you can think of that you're especially excited about?
There is one that I feel pretty good about. We appropriated $18 million to the hospitals in the last probably 24 hours of the legislative session. And part of that was to recognize that, you know, certain members of the Minnesota Hospital Association had worked really hard with Representative Sandra Feist to try to get a Keeping Nurses at the Bedside Act that hospitals could live with. And also to acknowledge that there was part of their appropriation they were expecting to come out of the finance bill that didn't make it. But that $18 million, I have now learned, is really making a big difference as hospitals are dealing with too many people in the emergency rooms and not having places to send them. So it's really helping them manage that kind of bottleneck that we have. And that's top of mind because I just got a thank you from some local hospitals.
Nice.
But there are many pieces to still unpack from this budget and policy session.
Great.
That's awesome.
And I guess finally, can you tell your members if they want help in the election 24 to come on the podcast, please?
Okay, absolutely.
Strong arm.
I will tell them that. I hear the kids these days listen to podcasts. That's right. They taught me LFG.
Especially ours, too.
I understand that the younger, hipper people know how to find podcasts on there. telecommunications device. So I will talk it up.
The young hip people love the DFL debrief.
Oh, big time.
Do me a favor and stay away from Be Real. Okay. All of this social media stuff. We don't need to be on it. So anyways, thank you, Speaker Hortman, for being on today. Thank you again for all you do. Keep it up. We're looking forward to partnering with you again on the campaign side, which will come down the road. But obviously there's a lot of work to be done between now and and next November to keep improving people's lives. We've already started that process. We look forward to a great another session.
Well, I have to thank you and all the listeners of the podcast who've been involved in DFL politics, because this last 2023 session is part of the biggest, longest running group project I've ever been assigned. And it really took all those folks who went out and knocked on doors and put lawn signs in their yard or helped put up lawn signs for us to get the election results so that we could have these policy results. So thank you and the party and all of our activists for what they do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Welcome back to You Betcha OGs. Ken, who does your You Betcha of the Week go out to?
My You Betcha for the Week, Brian and Will, goes out to Ohioans.
Oh, You Betcha, yeah.
Ohioans. Yeah. Ohioans?
Ohioans, okay. Yes. This past week, of course, I was on Tuesday night. We celebrated a huge win for democracy, a huge win for women's reproductive rights, and frankly, a whole host of other issues that were really in jeopardy because of this very nasty constitutional amendment that the conservative right movement in Ohio brought forward to try to limit the ability for majority rule in their mm-hmm. state. And we talked, of course, about this on our last episode with David Pepper, about what this really meant for not just Ohio, but frankly, for the whole country. And a huge shout out to the coalition, the pro-democracy coalition, which was led by the Ohio Democratic Party and their fantastic chairwoman, Liz Walters, for their work in defeating this mm-hmm. constitutional mm-hmm. amendment. And, you know, look, like I said, it's a big win for democracy, but as important, it's a big win for the Democratic Party as we go into this November's election and they have a ballot to enshrine abortion rights in their state. All eyes will be on Ohio, and this could be the turning point to flipping Ohio from a red state to a blue state. Record mm-hmm. turnout mm-hmm. in their election. I was pleased to be on the ground last weekend campaigning throughout Ohio, and I'll tell you, the energy was off the charts, and the result to me was not surprising on Tuesday night. It's a huge victory for all of us, progressives and others in this country who care about freedom.
Surely this loss for the anti-abortion movement will finally convince Republicans to give that up.
You know, I don't want to take all the credit for having David Pepper on and having that conversation, but certainly a lion's share of that win goes to the DFL debrief, right, Ken? How much did you hear about it when you were on the ground in Ohio? Was it every other door?
And our zero listeners in the state of Ohio.
I think they just like put iPads on those little moving platforms and had them like roll up to doors and play the podcast.
Yeah, it could be. Mm-hmm. Well, that was an Ohio-light of the week. Huh? What'd you think of that one? I wrote that. That's the genius.
Wow. You wrote that yourself?
This is why he's not in comedy, folks.
That's This is why, as Mitch Berg said, we don't let you out all that often.
That's true. That's true. You know, co-host of the podcast. It's okay, Mitch. It's okay, Mitch.
Well, so again, this last Tuesday, over 1.7 million Ohioans, 57%, voted no to reject that encroachment on voting rights and weakening our democracy. So really, really exciting news out of Ohio and a big You Betcha there.
That's great.
Agreed. How about your OGs?
My OGs for the week goes out to our favorites, Walter Hudson and Pam Altendorf.
OGs. Big OGs.
Walter Hudson and Pam Altendorf had some crazy climate denial tweets this past week. And let me just read you one from Walter Hudson on the Arctic sea ice, where he said, "Aztec priests leverage esoteric knowledge of natural cycles such as eclipses to make outlandish claims justifying their authority. Behold, the serpent devours the sun. They also engaged in human sacrifice. Today's climate priests are no different." That was Walter Hudson. And then here's Pam Altendorf's quote on Barack Obama's oceanfront estate. "This is your act on climate leader, Minnesota DFL, climate cultist, hypocrite, fake climate cult, fake COVID-19. Why no mask, Obama? You know, watch what they do, not what they say. They use your kindness, make you fearful, and profit. Oh. Wake up, America." That is an actual tweet a state legislator named, a state legislator named Pam Altendorf. Again, these Crazy wow. Wackadoodles were actually elected to office here in the state of Minnesota to the state legislature. And, you know, I wish these tweets were the craziest things that they've actually said or done. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to see them in action, go and watch any of the House floor debate and you'll mm-hmm. see just how crazy both of these folks are.
Funny thing about Pam Altendorf on her official Twitter account, I think her next tweet was her selling her mid-level marketing cleaning stuff at the Dakota County Fair.
So, oh, yeah.
From her official account.
So Norwex.
Yes.
It's a great product.
It's a green cleaner.
I didn't know she was in an MLM.
She is. She at Multi-level
marketing. Yeah.
Little pyramid scheme. It's great. Uh-huh. But Norwex is great. It's a good product. You should buy it.
I don't know.
And would you guys sell it for me?
Yeah. Become your distributors. Right? And then actually, would you recruit some other distributors
you need to get 10
for
other people
me?
To distribute.
DFL Debrief brought to you by Norwex and Cutco Knives.
And my sponsor, Pam Altendorf. Yeah.
God, I do love what I think Walter Hudson's tweet. I think he accused climate scientists of practicing human sacrifice, which I will admit was a bit of a PR blunder on their part. Like, they shouldn't have sacrificed those people on air to avert the climate crisis.
They're not comms people by trade.
Yeah. The science was there. They tried it out. It didn't work.
Who are we to question their methods?
Moloch.
I'm just... Unbelievable. That's who Republicans wanted to make laws. Like, a couple, it's just unbelievable.
I'm sure they'll start picking up those suburban seats now with Walter and...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Will, how about you? Who does your You Betcha of the Week go out to?
My You Betcha of the Week goes out to committed leftists in San Francisco.
Oh, you betcha, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Ken, this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who we've talked pretty extensively about here in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Ron DeSantis.
Made a little trip to Iowa and a diner there to talk to some voters. Well, he went on to drop a steaming pile of knowledge on all of us.
I mean, I had a guy tell me, like, you know, in San Francisco, they'll just defecate on the sidewalk. They use drugs out in public, no problem. And I'm like, really? Well, I happened to be in San Francisco a month or two ago. And within 10 minutes of me being in the city, I see some guy relieving himself on the sidewalk with number two. Like, I mean, it's just, I've never seen things like this before, but it shows you this is driven by leftist ideology.
Leftist ideology.
I believe that's chapter two of the Communist Manifesto.
On the streets. They got our memo. How'd he find that? He's saying this in a diner, and it's like, what is wrong with this guy?
I'm pretty sure we've never said in any of our party platform, vote for the DFL, and you can wherever you want.
Well, that's one of the things we're voting on this weekend at the SEC. Yeah.
If you see Ron DeSantis, you must.
Well, that's different. Yeah, actually.
That's a rule. I love it.
What an inspiring stump speech.
And you wonder why this campaign is going nowhere. This is the stuff he's talking about. God.
The people eating must have really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Who does your OGs for the week go out to, Will?
My OGs goes out to Republican campaign funders.
Oh, geez.
One of their biggest funders was sentenced to 21 years in prison today. Anton Lazaro, who was a co-host of the GOP official podcast and was a very close confidant of their former chair and a heavy funder of multiple of their candidates and even some current sitting congressmen right now. He was arrested for running an underage sex ring and distributing pornography. And luckily, he was brought to court and tried. And now he was just sentenced to 21 years in prison. So good job, criminal justice system. Bad job, Anton Lazaro and Republicans for promoting him. True story, Ken and I met him once at a taping of a local news show. It was a little strange at the time, but, you know, we didn't really know quite how strange.
Very fair.
Brian, who is your You Betcha for the week? And I hope it's much more pleasant.
My You Betcha for the week is going to go out to the south of France.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump was giving a campaign speech recently when he said the following about, I believe, one of his many indictments.
No, it's a phony story. They know it's a phony story. They say he's going to go to jail. These are not Mrs. Lewandowski. You hear that? Can you imagine if that with these kids? Can you imagine look what your husband got me into? I could have been relaxing at Mar-a-Lago or in the south of France, which I would prefer being in this country, frankly.
So
he'd prefer the south of France over this country that he's trying to be president of.
Amazing. Like, go for it, Donald.
Yeah, that's a great campaign strategy for sure.
And spend as much time there as you'd like. And also just like, I mean, I don't know, like, it's, is it even worth saying, like, if a Democrat said that, they would be endlessly what's even the point? I did love him saying that he went after Ron DeSantis simply because he thought Ron was running for president. Like he just openly said, like, I went after him because he was running. It's like, of course.
At least he was honest, I guess.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like, he liked him until he decided to run. It's amazing. Like, genuinely so bizarre.
Your OGs for the week.
My OGs for the week is going to go out to Florida Education.
Oh, geez.
So Florida recently made PragerU, which is this right-wing propaganda outfit. They made them an official state vendor for their public schools. So now some materials that teachers will be able to teach with are PragerU kids videos. And allow me to play you this clip from one of their videos about Christopher Columbus. For context, it's like this animated thing where these two kids go back in time to talk to Christopher Columbus and find out what he's all about. Let's listen.
Slavery is as old as time and has taken place in every corner of the world, even amongst the people I just left. Being taken as a slave is better than being killed, no? I don't see the problem.
Well, in our time, we view slavery as being evil and terrible.
Ah, magnifico. That's wonderful. I am glad humanity has reached such a time. But you said you're from 500 years in the future? How can you come here to the 15th century and judge me by your standards from the 21st century? For those in the future to look back and do this is, well, estúpido.
Who are we to say that slavery was bad because we did not live in the 1500s?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Like, it's just so bizarre.
The future is bright for Florida. No doubt about it.
And the defensiveness of it is just, like, clearly they know that they are in the wrong because, like, it's not, like, they don't even just, like, yeah, he was great. It's like, yeah, he's not as much of a monster as people say he is, we promise. Like, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, really strange stuff.
Uh-huh. And just, like, I just...
Do you think, like, if we went back in time and talked to Columbus and we were like, yeah, slavery's bad in the future. And he's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, right.
I don't have to do that anymore.
I'm so glad.
It was my entire fortune's based on it, but, you know.
I hate that I'm, like, making tons of money doing this. I wish someone would just, like... Yeah, the whitewashing of it is remarkable, and I feel bad for kids in Florida public schools because they deserve better than that garbage. So now we are going to take a short break and bring you the facts of Vlad.
Take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of
Vlad.
The facts of
Vlad.
When the world never seems to be living up to your dreams, and suddenly you finding out the facts of
Vlad.
Fact of Vlad, since FDR's landslide re-election in 1936, there's only been two Minnesota counties that have not voted for DFL or Democratic presidential candidates, Otter Tail County and Carver County. Carver County got the closest it's ever been in 2020 with 46% of the vote for President Biden, and the trajectory it's on, I have a feeling it's going to flip next year.
When the world never seems to be living up to your dreams, and suddenly
Vlad.
All about you.
Welcome back to DFL Trivia. Here is your host, DFL Party Chairman Ken Martin.
Brian and Will, we are back with trivia. Last week's question was as follows. Which of the following are Will quotes from former President Donald Trump? A, I look very much forward to showing my financials because they are huge. B, sorry, losers and haters, but my IQ is one of the highest and you all know it. C, show me someone with no ego and I'll show you a big loser. D, man, we could use a big fat dose of global warming. And E, my all-time favorite. I would like to extend my best wishes to all, even the haters and losers, on this special date, September 11th.
Oh, wow. That's a good bit of creative writing you did, Brian, for many of those.
The answer, of course, is this is a trick question because all of them are absolutely 100% real. This, by the way, is the former president of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
I got the idea to try to do this, and I was going to try to write fake quotes from him. And I sat there for a couple minutes, and I just, like, I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't come up with anything that could be as bananas as... Like, yeah, you can't parody him.
The term beyond parody was made for Donald Trump and his Twitter account.
That's just crazy. Well, the winner this week, we had a lot of responses to this, but only one correct winner, Andrea W. You are the lucky recipient of a $25 gift card. Congratulations. Don't spend it all in one place. Actually, as I've said before, you can only spend that gift card in one place. That's on our DFL web store, www.dfl.org/store. Great merchandise there, as I've always said. We encourage you to go there, especially if you're looking for State Fair merchandise. We are getting ready for the annual Great Minnesota Get-Together. Please visit us at the booth this year on the corner of Dan Patch and Cooper. I believe that's our address.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We've got some really fun merch in the works, too.
Can we get that haters and losers quote on a button or something?
Oh, my God. I would like that's actually a great idea.
Yeah.
But if you can't visit us at the State Fair in person, you can always get your State Fair merchandise on our online store. So feel free to visit our website.
Indeed. That is dfl.org/store.
Now, this week's question is the following. This week's question is as follows. In 2015, what former Minnesota Viking retired from serving on the Minnesota Supreme Court after a term of 22 years?
Folks can submit their answers to podcast@dfl.org. That is podcast@dfl.org. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of the DFL Debrief. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording. We will see you all next week.
Tell you, it was one hell of a show.